Chapter 2. And one or two others who did not fall till they had run a little way. The first explosion had brought together a crowd, as if by enchantment. The second made as swiftly a solitude in the street for hundreds of yards in each direction. Through the falling snow, people looked from afar at the small heap of dead bodies lying upon each other near the carcasses of the two horses. Nobody dared to approach till some Cossacks of a street patrol galloped up, and, dismounting, began to turn over the dead. Amongst the innocent victims of the second explosion laid out on the pavement there was a body dressed in a peasant's sheepskin coat. But the face was unrecognizable. There was absolutely nothing found in the pockets of its poor clothing, and it was the only one whose identity was never established. That day Mr. Razumov got up at his usual hour, and spent the morning within the university buildings listening to the lectures and working for some time in the library. He heard the first vague rumor of something in the way of bomb throwing at the table of the student's ordinary, where he was accustomed to eat his 2 o'clock dinner. But this rumor was made up of mere whispers, and this was Russia, where it was not always safe, for a student especially, to appear too much interested in certain kinds of whispers. Razumov was one of those men who, living in a period of mental and political unrest, keep an instinctive hold on normal practical everyday life. He was aware of the emotional tension of his time. He even responded to it in an indefinite way. But his main concern was with his work, his studies, and with his own future. Officially and in fact without a family, for the daughter of the archpriest had long been dead, no home influences had shaped his opinions or his feelings. He was as lonely in the world as a man swimming in the deep sea. The word Razumov was the mere label of a solitary individuality. There were no Razumovs belonging to him anywhere. His closest parentage was defined in the statement that he was a Russian. Whatever good he expected from life would be given to, or withheld from his hopes by that connection alone. This immense parentage suffered from the throes of internal dissensions, and he shrank mentally from the fray as a good-natured man may shrink from taking definite sides in a violent family quarrel. Razumov, going home, reflected that having prepared all the matters of the forthcoming examination, he could now devote his time to the subject of the prize essay. He hankered after the silver medal. The prize was offered by the Ministry of Education. The names of the competitors would be submitted to the minister himself. The mere fact of trying would be considered meritorious in the higher quarters, and the possessor of the prize would have a claim to an administrative appointment of the better sort after he had taken his degree. The student Razumov, in an access of elation, forgot the dangers menacing the stability of the institutions which give rewards and appointments. But remembering the medalist of the year before, Razumov, the young man of no parentage, was sobered. He and some others happened to be assembled in their comrades' rooms at the very time when that last received the official advice of his success. He was a quiet, unassuming young man. "Forgive me," he had said with a faint apologetic smile and taking up his cap, "I am going out to order up some wine. But I must first send a telegram to my folk at home. I say, won't the old people make it a festive time for the neighbors for 20 miles around our place?" Razumov thought there was nothing of that sort for him in the world. His success would matter to no one. But he felt no bitterness against the nobleman, his protector, who was not a provincial magnate as was generally supposed. He was in fact nobody less than Prince K, once a great and splendid figure in the world and now, his day being over, a senator and a gouty invalid, living in a still splendid, but more domestic manner. He had some young children and a wife as aristocratic and proud as himself. In all his life Razumov was allowed only once to come into personal contact with the prince. It had the air of a chance meeting in the little attorney's office. One day Razumov, coming in by appointment, found a stranger standing there, a tall, aristocratic-looking personage with silky, gray side whiskers. the bald-headed, sly little lawyer fellow called out, come in, Mr. Razumov, with a sort of ironic heartiness. Then turning deferentially to the stranger with the grand air, a ward of mine, Your Excellency. One of the most promising students of his faculty in the St. Petersburg University. To his intense surprise, Razumov saw a white shapely hand extended to him. He took it in great confusion. It was soft and passive, and heard at the same time a condescending murmur in which he caught only the words satisfactory and persevere. But the most amazing thing of all was to feel suddenly a distinct pressure of the white shapely hand just before it was withdrawn. A light pressure like a secret sign. The emotion of it was terrible. Razumov's heart seemed to leap into his throat. When he raised his eyes, the aristocratic personage, motioning the little lawyer aside, had opened the door and was going out. The attorney rummaged amongst the papers on his desk for a time. Oh, you know who that was? He asked suddenly. Razumov, whose heart was thumping hard yet, shook his head in silence. That was Prince K. You wonder what he could be doing in the hole of a poor legal rat like myself, eh? These awfully great people have their sentimental curiosities like common sinners. But if I were you, Kirillo Sidorovich, he continued, leering and laying a peculiar emphasis on the patronymic, I wouldn't boast at large of the introduction. It would not be prudent, Kirillo Sidorovich. Oh dear no. It would be in fact dangerous for your future. The young man's ears burned like fire, his sight was dim. Hat man! Razumov was saying to himself. E. Henceforth it was by this monosyllable that Mr. Razumov got into the habit of referring mentally to the stranger with gray silky side whiskers. Greater than from that time too, when walking in the more fashionable quarters, he noted with interest the magnificent horses and carriages with Prince K.'s liveries on the box. Once he saw the princess get out, she was shopping followed by two girls, of which one was nearly a head taller than the other. Their fair hair hung loose down their backs, in the English style. They had merry eyes, their coats, muffs, and little fur caps were exactly alike, and their cheeks and noses were tinged a cheerful pink by the frost. They crossed the pavement in front of him, and Razumov went on his way smiling shyly to himself. His daughters. They resembled him. The young man felt a glow of warm friendliness towards these girls who would never know of his existence. Presently they would marry generals or camerers, and have girls and boys of their own, who perhaps would be aware of him as a celebrated old professor, decorated, possibly a privy counselor, one of the glories of Russia, nothing more. But a celebrated professor was a somebody. Distinction would convert the label Razumov into an honored name. There was nothing strange in the student Razumov's wish for distinction. A man's real life is that accorded to him in the thoughts of other men by reason of respect or natural love. Returning home on the day of the attempt on Mr. De P.'s life, Razumov resolved to have a good try for the silver medal. Climbing slowly the four flights of the dark, dirty staircase in the house, where he had his lodgings, he felt confident of success. The winner's name would be published in the papers on New Year's Day. And at the thought that he would most probably read it there, Razumov stopped short on the stairs for an instant, then went on smiling faintly at his own emotion. This is but a shadow, he said to himself, but the medal is a solid beginning. With those ideas of industry in his head, the warmth of his room was agreeable and encouraging. She'll put in 4 hours of good work, he thought. But no sooner had he closed the door than he was horribly startled. All black against the usual tall stove of white tiles gleaming in the dusk, stood a strange figure, wearing a skirted, close-fitting, brown cloth coat strapped round the waist, in long boots, and with a little astrakhan cap on its head. It loomed lithe and martial. Razumov was utterly confounded. It was only when the figure advancing 2 paces asked in an untroubled, grave voice if the outer door was closed, that he regained his power of speech. Halton, Viktor Viktorovich. Is that you? Yes. The outer door is shut all right. But this is indeed unexpected. Victor Alden, a student older than most of his contemporaries at the university, was not one of the industrious set. He was hardly ever seen at lectures. The authorities had marked him as restless and sound very bad notes. But he had a great personal prestige with his comrades and influenced their thoughts. Razumov had never been intimate with him. They had met from time to time at gatherings in other students' houses. They had even had a discussion together, one of those discussions on first principles dear to the sanguine minds of youth. Razumov wished the man had chosen some other time to come for a chat. He felt in good trim to tackle the prize essay. But as Alden could not be slightingly dismissed, Razumov adopted the tone of hospitality, asking him to sit down and smoke. Kirillo Sidorovich, said the other, flinging off his cap, we are not perhaps in exactly the same camp. Your judgment is more philosophical. You are a man of few words, but I haven't met anybody who dared to doubt the generosity of your sentiments. There is a solidity about your character which cannot exist without courage. Razumov felt flattered, and began to murmur shyly something about being very glad of his good opinion, when Alden raised his hand. That is what I was saying to myself, he continued, as I dodged in the woodyard down by the riverside. He has a strong character, this young man, apostrophe I said to myself. He does not throw his soul to the winds. Apostrophe, apostrophe, your reserve has always fascinated me, Kirillo Sidorovich. So I tried to remember your address. But look here, it was a piece of luck. Your dvornik was away from the gate talking to a sleigh driver on the other side of the street. I met no one on the stairs, not a soul. As I came up to your floor, I caught sight of your landlady coming out of your rooms. But she did not see me. She crossed the landing to her own side, and then I slipped in. I have been here 2 hours expecting you to come in every moment. Razumov had listened in astonishment. But before he could open his mouth, Alden added, speaking deliberately, it was I who removed the pea this morning. Razumov kept down a cry of dismay. The sentiment of his life, being utterly ruined by this contact with such a crime, expressed itself quaintly by a sort of half-derisive mental exclamation, there goes my silver medal. Alden continued after waiting a while, you say nothing, Kirillo Sidorovich. I understand your silence. To be sure, I cannot expect you with your frigid English manner to embrace me. But never mind your manners. You have enough heart to have heard the sound of weeping and gnashing of teeth this man raised in the land. That would be enough to get over any philosophical hoax. He was uprooting the tender plant. He had to be stopped. He was a dangerous man, a convinced man. 3 more years of his work would have put us back 50 years into bondage, and look at all the lives wasted, at all the souls lost in that time. His curt, self-confident voice suddenly lost its ring, and it was in a dull tone that he added, yes, brother, I have killed him. It's weary work. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.